Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gramling.
I'm Jenny Brentis.
I'm Connor Orr.
And that was really good, guys. That was our little 60 minutes intro for this show that we're trying out now.
Seamless.
The podcast equivalent of the three-person weave drill.
I love it. Yes, it's and really, anytime you do a good intro, you have to acknowledge it, and you have to celebrate it, which is what we're doing now. But now we got a show to do. And look, the dust has settled. The smoke has cleared a little bit on the 2021 NFL offseason. And there are just a handful of teams that I think the three of us overlooked, I guess is the word. I mean, we know what the major storylines were. Obviously, everyone's talking Aaron Rodgers at the moment, and we'll see what happens with that as the spring and summer unfold. But just a handful of teams that were, maybe you scratch your heads, maybe you're excited about it, maybe you're just kind of confused about the entire thing. But we're gonna help break down some of these situations here. And we'll start with a slightly newsy topic, and that is the Vikings, who were reportedly interested in taking Justin Fields had he fallen to the 14th pick of the draft. Now, obviously, they ended up taking Kellen Mond in round three. Not that round three quarterbacks necessarily are your locked-in dude to the future or whatever it might be, but it's kind of clear the Vikings have at least one eye toward maybe a Kirk Cousins-less future.
Yeah, and I don't know how much it makes sense. I mean, I think that Kirk Cousins is the perfect example of the... You get excited about the idea of something that you don't have without maybe fully processing the value of what you do have. And I'm not saying... You know, I think he's probably just a little underappreciated. Like, if you look at... I don't care what sort of analytical stats you prefer. I mean, you know, I'm on, you know, yards above replacement, defense adjusted yards above replacement, Football Outsiders. You know, Kirk Cousins is a top 10 quarterback. He had about as many defensive yards adjusted yards above replacement as Justin Herbert. He had more than Matt Ryan, Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, Philip Rivers, Matt Stafford, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield. I mean, he's always kind of been that 10th, 11th guy, you know, but I think we've seen better teams take worse quarterbacks to the Super Bowl, and he seems fine to me. But I think everybody kind of wants what they can't have, and I think some coaches probably do feel the pressure when they're seeing non-mobile quarterbacks generate a lot more offense. And so, maybe that's the natural inclination, is to start kind of looking around and seeing what else is out there.
I also think he's under contract for one more year at a significant price tag. And perhaps the Vikings saw Justin Fields. They really liked him. They saw a lot of potential there. And if you make that pick, then you have the flexibility to move on from Kirk Cousins, and you can potentially shift away from this model of, you know, or get, you know, being in the, we're overpaying a veteran quarterback who's not one of the top three quarterbacks, to, okay, now we have a guy in a rookie deal. So I think it makes a lot of sense from that perspective. Obviously, there are some quarterbacks that it is very worth paying. And you point out, Connor, that Cousins has been decent, but he's not in that elite level where you can say this significant portion of the salary cap is the thing that's going to get us to the next level.
Yeah, it's funny. I would say Kirk Cousins is legitimately underrated while also being legitimately overpaid, which is just sort of the function of what you get when you sign a veteran quarterback at this point. And look, Mike McCartney has done a nice job leveraging Cousins over the last couple of years, when the Vikings needed to get that contract restructure a couple of years ago, or I guess that was last offseason at this point, in order to fit some things under the cap. They pretty much locked in Cousins through the 2022 season with some of the levers in that deal. So he's going to be there for a little bit, and I do understand the Vikings kind of looking around the league and being like, man, wouldn't it be sweet if we had a dude for like $11 million a year instead of like $30 million a year, and also that dude was also like Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or someone like that. So I understand why they're looking around. And it seems like that's kind of been the situation with whether it was Washington first or now Minnesota. When you have Kirk Cousins, you're kind of like, all right, this feels pretty good. But, what, you know, what else might we be able to do? But I feel like this is the first time either one of those teams with Cousins on the roster really, I don't know, start to get, if I could use a meaningless buzzword, proactive about finding the next guy.
Yeah, it was definitely a proactive approach. And it didn't work out, so they ended up taking a guy in round three, which is a very different spot to take a quarterback. That's a little bit more of a flyer. Doesn't reflect necessarily as much on Cousins' future with the team. Maybe they like the way Mond's developing, and that gives them flexibility down the line, but it's not the same thing as grabbing Fields if he falls to you, which in their defense was potentially an opportunity that they wouldn't have been able to pass up.
That would have been that would have been spicy. Like, that would have been the draft day heat that I needed.
Yeah.
And I think the whole, my whole issue, since a lot of this is about me anyway, is I was so upset about what the 49ers did at three, which is what I wanted them to do. But then I chickened out and said they would do something else. Is like I just wasted so much time kind of kicking stones about that and being bummed out that I didn't really, like, by the time the Bears came up to get Justin Fields, I was like, okay, well, the Bears need a quarterback, but like I could have really used like a little bit of, like, you know, intrigue there, you know, and just been like, oh, you know, Kirk Cousins is mad. Not, and that's Kirk Cousins being mad is different than Andy Dalton being mad. And it would have been better for me if the Vikings had done that. Just kind of gone up and got him. But it's also a lazy and kind of ridiculous thing to leak, because if you like the guy, then let's throw out this idea of best player on the board, because clearly you're just kind of sitting on your hands. Like, go get him then. If he's that good and you like him that much, don't buffer it and protect yourself so that if he plays well, you can be like, well, we tried to get him. But no, just go up and get him and make it happen.
That's a good point. There was a lot of that with Mahomes a few years ago too, right? Well, Sean Payton would have taken him if Andy Reid didn't move up or such and such.
Guys, I definitely would have taken Russell Wilson had another guy in the war room not said he was just too short to take, but I was banging the table for him. So
I happened to cover a team where that was a very oft recycled storyline. I believe when I covered the Jets, it was the director of pro. I was looking back at my stories that I'd written on it in the past. I think it was Terry Bradway, who was the pro personnel director, liked Russell Wilson so much that they called him Terry Wilson or Russell Bradway. I forget, like, they called him that throughout the draft week, and then they didn't pick him. And I think, would that have been the Geno Smith draft, somewhere around there?
Oh boy. Ooh. I'm getting the years mixed up, but that's sort of a...
I think Geno was like a year or two after Russ.
Geno was a year or two after Russ. Okay.
They took
somebody else, or maybe they had re-signed Mark Sanchez to a contract at that point. But, you know, I was doing a story on it, and then I asked the GM about it, and I said, hey, you know, your pro personnel director loved Russell Wilson. And he said, well, Connor, success has many fathers and failure an orphan. And so I always remembered that when I think about exactly what we're doing right now. And that was a great point by Jenny. Like, the Mahomes positing was just so epic last year. It's, well, we liked him. Well, he fell to like 10 and he was a generational quarterback. So you probably should have just gotten up and got him.
So the year that Russell Wilson was drafted, the New York Jets took Stephen Hill in the second round.
Ooh.
Okay. Well, he was a project. Let's see how it plays out before we judge that.
So, yeah. You know, they had opportunities to get Wilson and didn't, so.
Yeah, that's the thing with Fields and the teams that, you know, if Justin Fields does become a star, who will sort of go down this path of saying, like, oh, well, we really want him, we didn't have the draft ammo to the draft capital to move up or whatever it might be. One, he's a quarterback. Number two, I mentioned this a couple of times. If you look ahead to next year's draft class, especially if your team like the Vikings, who's, you know, I mean, look, the Vikings are probably going to be pretty good. They're going to be, I think, as a worst case scenario, probably picking in the mid-teens, more likely picking in the 20s. Next year's quarterback class is not shaping up to be particularly good. Now, there are about 10 guys who you could look at and say this could be the Zach Wilson of this year. Will multiple guys become that guy and sort of break out? I think it's unlikely at this point, but if Justin Fields had gone back to Ohio State, I don't see any scenario where he's not the odds-on favorite to be the number one pick in the 2022 draft. And therefore, I don't know, if you didn't have enough conviction to move him and get him this year, you didn't like him that much in the end.
Yeah, and that's why some of these draft postmortems, which are done anonymously, you know, for good reason, obviously, but like, you know, the Packers leaking, for example, that they were going to take Justin Jefferson if he fell to him. Yeah, I mean, of course I would too, in hindsight, you know. When you put all the players into a pool in Madden franchise mode, you can look a lot smarter when you already realize what they've accomplished. But, you know, now the pre-doing of that and saying, well, you know, we're thinking about going up and getting them, but decided not to. It really is like the ultimate politics move. Like, because if he's good, then you can say we liked him. And if he's bad, you can say, but we realized that Christian Darrisaw was so much more important to the franchise.
Or you just hope that everyone forgets that you mentioned that you liked him.
I won't forget. People don't forget.
The Monday Morning NFL Podcast never forgets. And by the way, speaking of things that we don't forget, quick update on last week before we move on to the Rams, a team that did make a change at quarterback this offseason. That Tom Donahoe storyline we talked a little bit about on the draft recap show, and that he was he appeared to be a little bit upset. He did explain himself, and it was no big deal because he didn't realize he was on camera. And therefore, all of his actions are null and void, was the explanation there.
Oh, good.
I mean, I think that there is some value in draft room cameras for capturing that moment just like that. You know, people say, well, everyone's just celebrating. You don't actually see anything. But I enjoy the draft room cameras. I like to see who's in the mix, who's sitting next to each other, how people are interacting. And every once in a while, you have a dysfunctional team that is laid bare for the world to see.
It is amazing that, like, with all the, like, faux military preparedness that they all claim to have, that, like, they can't just look happy for 2 freaking seconds when the thing is on them, you know? And I'm sure that they have some kind of warning. I'm sure the light turns green and it's like, hey, mm-hmm. by the way, you know, you guys are on here. Like, how many times have we watched NFL games and, you know, in Sunday Night Football, and the camera goes into the booth for, like, Elway, and someone gives him the nudge, you know, because, whatever, he's half asleep in his popcorn, or, I'm just not saying Elway, I'm saying this, Jerry Jones, whoever it is.
An Elway-ish character.
And they get the nudge, and then they like, stand up, and they're just like, yeah, yeah, uh-huh, like, football guy doing football stuff, you know, but I just can't believe that some of these teams can't manage to look professional for like a 45-second window that they're going to be on this thing.
But, I mean, there's so many times when a moment that's captured like that looks very prescient in retrospect, like Bill O'Brien freaking out last year's draft when he was, you know, at home in his home office, you know, by himself, but freaking out at somebody over the phone. That really took on a lot of new meaning when the events of the fall unfolded, so...
To be a fly on the wall of that one right there.
Yes.
That was a good one.
So the Rams are a team that actually got one of these moving franchise quarterbacks here. You know, that's been sort of the storyline of the offseason, the increasing power that franchise quarterbacks wield here. We haven't seen Aaron Rodgers move yet. We haven't seen Russell Wilson move. Matthew Stafford did get moved, and we all kind of forgot about it because... immediately after we were wondering if Aaron Rodgers is going to move. So just taking a quick look at the Rams here, and as we know, this is their MO. They trade all the first-round picks and get veteran talent, but this is the first time they did it for a quarterback, and they moved on from a guy who, Jared Goff's extension was supposed to kick in 2022. In 2021. It will. It just will kick in for the Detroit Lions rather than the LA Rams, but what do we make of the Rams at this point entering this year? Now that Stafford is in, they continue to sort of lose all this young talent, both on the field and in the on the coaching staff. I mean, Brandon Staley's gone after he did such a tremendous job with that defense last year. Was this kind of the next step forward for them, or is this a team that's sort of, I don't know, thrashing a little bit to stay above water in the NFC?
I put this down as a topic to discuss today because when we were doing the MMQB power rankings last week, the Stafford trade just felt so far from my mind. For a half a second, I was like, what did the Rams do this offseason that would change their power ranking? Oh, yes, they traded for Matthew Stafford. So it just feels like a distant memory, right? It happened so soon after the conclusion of the season, but it was potentially the most significant move. I mean, if Sean McVay was as held back by Jared Goff as he apparently believes he is, or the rest of the organization believes he is, then this is supposed to be the move that would put them over the top. But it's also something of a truth serum for, is this working with the Rams? Because you go out and you get the quarterback that's supposed to not hold you back in the least, physically, mentally, whatever you want to do on the field. And so now there is a lot of pressure. Can all of the moves that they've made over the last few years, all of these bold moves, finally pay off? And in fairness, obviously they went to the Super Bowl, but they're clearly in search of winning a ring and making all these bold moves with a purpose in mind.
Just a crazy thing for the Rams to do. You had such a good setup where everybody thought you were smart, but that you just didn't have a good enough quarterback. And ask any psychologist and they'll tell you the healthy thing to do is to blame everything on somebody else and to just allow that unhealthiness to linger for a long period of time. And that's what they should have done. But kudos to them for going all in and showing us. I mean, I don't see any statistical evidence that, you know, this was a market upgrade, right? But the Rams system is great and the Lions system for a long time was horrible. And so I think that's the great equalizer here is what it's going to look like. But I feel like so much crazy stuff happens in the NFL now that we're going to reach the point where we were last year, where it's going to be like August and we're all going to look around and say, we should start talking about the fact that Cam Newton's on the Patriots, you know? And I think that that'll hit us all collectively like, wow, Matt Stafford is on the Rams now, and that's a lot different than it used to be.
Yeah, I think the arrival of Stafford, I mean, look, theoretically, you can do a lot more with your offense with Stafford than you can with Goff. It's funny, I think back to week one last year. I don't know if you guys remember, it was so long ago, that Cowboys-Rams game, I think it was a Sunday night game that week, but that game ended... The Rams won it. The game ended on a play where McVay had clearly set up a play action on, it was a third and medium, had clearly set up a sort of a final nail in the coffin play action call where Cooper Kupp was going to leak out and come open, and it was going to be an easy throw. It was going to be a 15-yard gain, even though the Cowboys were kind of expecting them to run it one more time, run out the clock, et cetera, et cetera. So he makes the call, and Goff rolls out, and Cooper Kupp is wide open, and Goff just doesn't throw the ball. And I remember Collinsworth kind of saying very gently, he's like, I don't know, your coach just designed that play, and he called it, and it worked, and he didn't throw it. So now you got to go explain something to the coach. You know, he checked it down, and the Rams punted, and they held on anyway. So I don't know. happy-ish ending, I guess. But yeah, as far as that goes, it was just kind of a moment that I keep thinking back on, where it's like, I don't know, it's like McVay is trying to unlock a little bit more out of Goff, get him to play a little more aggressively, and Goff just kind of shrugged his shoulders in that moment and said, eh, rather not, and did his thing. The one thing that's going to define this Rams team, though, in 2021 is going to be what the defense does. Post-Brandon Staley, we see it time and time again where it's just very difficult, considering, you know, it's an entire unit you need to sort of keep together and keep that chemistry going. And it's just difficult, especially with the pieces that they lost this year, to imagine this being the number one defense in football again with Raheem Morris coming in to run it now, just because of the pieces they lost and just because it's difficult for anyone to do it year to year. We've seen what the Bears have done since that sort of historic season they had in 2018 defensively. They're still a good defense, but they're not a stand on your head and you're going to win 12 games because of this side of the ball type of defense anymore. And you wonder if the defense kind of sinks back a little bit, and that kind of maybe cancels out the improvement they get offensively, and ultimately you end up just being a I don't know, one of these sad 11-win teams that doesn't play in the Super Bowl.
I mean, if you look at the run that Brandon Staley had over the second half of the season as defensive coordinator, they were on pace to break the NFL record, I think, until the last two games of the regular season. They were on pace to break the NFL record for fewest second-half points allowed in NFL history.
Hmm.
And it was a ridiculous stretch where, you know, it was like, you know, 3 points, 6 points, 3 points. And Staley in particular's ability to adjust at halftime, I think, got him a head coaching job. But if I were Les Snead and Sean McVay, you know, if you made that move, if you knew you were going to make that move for Stafford, I would have been so much more aggressive in trying to keep him for one more year, too. And I understand that Staley had to go. I mean, it was a good opportunity, and it's a great roster to go coach, and you don't have to move very far. But, like, I think he was almost as integral to their being good enough to make the playoffs as anything last year and would be this year. Like, I think you're, if it makes sense, you're adding Stafford to a team because you believe you're one guy away, but then you remove a lot of the foundational aspects of what made that team good and is no longer that team that was one guy away, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you're putting double pressure on the offense. Not only do you have Stafford and you're expecting the offense to deliver at the level you wanted them to with Goff, now you're also putting more pressure on the offense because the defense may drop off a little bit.
So let's go east to the Tennessee Titans. 2 years ago, they make the conference championship game in the AFC. Last year, they win the AFC South, edging out the Colts, but obviously go down in the first round of the playoffs in a home loss to the Ravens. They had, just very quietly, I mean, they completely redid this defense. And it's a defense that has not played particularly well the last couple of years. They were built around a really talented secondary. And we saw a couple of years ago when that secondary was fully healthy. And, you know, between Byard at safety, one of the top safeties in the league, and their top three corners at the time were Adoree Jackson, Malcolm Butler, Logan Ryan. You had, you know, arguably one of the best, not even arguably, you just had one of the best secondaries in the NFL, and that's what was kind of carrying them. They have struggled to find that pass rush, and again, a great pass rush makes your secondary even better, and vice versa, but it just hasn't quite synced up. So essentially, that, you know, all those cornerbacks are gone now, so you have a new group coming in there, and they go, and Mike Vrabel's trying to kind of recapture what he had in Houston with, you know, maybe a little bit of this diamond front look type of stuff. You know, Jeffrey Simmons is a potential rising star, and then you have Bud Dupree is their big addition. He's coming off the torn ACL, and we'll see what he does now that he won't be opposite T.J. Watt in Pittsburgh, but It's just really interesting what they've done defensively, and then offensively, you know, they lose Corey Davis. They're still looking for an answer at right tackle. Josh Reynolds comes in. He's probably not Corey Davis going forward. It's just, it's a team that looks like maybe they've slid back a little bit, but by the same token, it's a really good coaching staff. And do they end up getting the best out of this roster, and they end up winning the AFC South again anyway?
Yeah, it was a pretty aggressive defensive makeover. And then you also add in Caleb Farley, who slid a little bit because of some of the injury concerns, but has said he'll be ready for training camp. You also wonder if the opt-out played into that slide. So they potentially got the possibly the top corner in the draft if he's healthy and can play well in the back half of the first round. So that's another piece that they could use and could get a similar, you know, similar to the situation with Simmons, who was coming off the torn ACL, right? They could have gotten a player whose stock was driven down by injury and end up getting a really good player late in the first round in their draft spot.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that the Titans, to me, are similar to what we've been talking about with the Rams, where what's made them great is no longer sustainable, I think, for the long run. And I mean, I'm probably going to sound wrong until the year that I'm not, but I think it's going to be difficult to depend on Derrick Henry to pace them the way that he has in the past. I mean, you had basically a 400 carry season, which was 2 years ago, which was previously the death knell for all running backs, and then repeated it with another phenomenal performance last year. And you know, he takes great care of his body. I mean, you know, he focuses a lot on that, and he's shaped differently than other running backs in the past. So there's obviously reason to believe that he can do this for a little bit longer. But and then you lose your offensive coordinator. I just don't know how much of this, regardless of what you're doing here, that you can kind of rekindle the magic there. I think really what you would need to do is almost try to pivot in another direction and see if you could kind of, you know, run somewhere else and figure something else out. Because I just don't think you're going to be able to win the way that you've been winning in the past for very much longer.
Yeah, Connor and I were low on the Titans last year and didn't think that they could follow up the season before's performance, and a little bit of a fall off, but ultimately a playoff team. But they still play in the AFC South, and we don't know how quickly Trevor Lawrence will acclimate to the NFL. We don't know what's going to happen with Wentz in Indianapolis. We don't know who's playing quarterback for the Texans next year. So, you know, they still have that ability to get into the playoff, even with potential flaws, and then get hot at a certain point in time. But I agree with you, Connor. It is a befuddling formula, I would say, to go forward with. And you wonder if it just runs out, especially now that they have also lost Arthur Smith on offense.
Yeah, that's a great point, by the way. And Todd Downing is one of the kind of fascinating coaching situations here. A lot of you remember him as the Raiders offensive coordinator when Derek Carr sort of took that downturn a couple years ago. And one of the issues with that Raiders offense was they did not meld the run game and the passing game in any way, shape, or form. Part of that was play calling situations. Part of it was stylistically what the quarterback wanted to do, seemingly. But it was like they either come out and spread, and it was like, okay, well, they're throwing, or they'd come out with a heavier personnel, and it'd be, okay, they're running, but there was no, like, play action. and now Todd Downing a couple years later, and he's been in that Titans organization for a couple seasons now, and obviously he's a you know, he's a youngish guy, and certainly could learn some new tricks at this point. And I don't think you're going to see him try and recapture the magic of the, I don't know, 2018 Raiders or whatever it was. But this is like a completely, I don't know, polar opposite offense to what he ran with the Raiders. And on top of that, even if he calls it well, does he get another historic season out of Derrick Henry? That's something that is just a little bit out of his control at this point. And it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out with Downing, who you know, was sort of considered a rising young star in the coaching ranks and maybe slid back a little bit after that turn as Raiders coordinator. And now he's plucked into, I don't know, I think it's a really tough spot for anyone to step into. But I think especially for a guy like Downing.
You can't run your offense. you can't run the offense that you're bringing. You have to run the offense that was in place before you got there, because all the offensive line moves that they made, the fact that you're still building around Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, it's all predicated on running the offense that was in place. And, you know, it's just not going to work any other way. And so I don't know if that was made expressly clear at the out front, if they think that they're going to, you know, try to do something else. But if they're hanging on to this core group of personnel, nothing else is going to work. And so I think it'll be really interesting to see what they try to do.
No, absolutely. I mean, they have to run the same thing. And by the way, it was 2017 when he was the Raiders' offensive coordinator. But since leaving the Raiders, he has gone to Minnesota, and we know what they do offensively with the Shanahan Kubiak stuff. And then he's been in Tennessee as the tight ends coach the last two seasons. So he has certainly gotten a sort of master class in this wide zone offense that the Titans have used. And we'll see what happens, because it's not only the design of the offense. A lot of it is the play calling, and Arthur Smith was one of the best play-to-play play callers in the league, and Downing will have to replicate that, which is a tall order, but, you know, he's capable of it. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Guys, I don't know if anyone really talks about the NFC East in this league, but we'll shine the spotlight over there at some of these, you know, sort of small market teams going on here. This was such a bad division last season. You could argue, I don't want to argue with you guys, but you could argue if you wanted that these are between Dallas, the Giants, and the Washington football team. These are three of the most improved teams in the NFL this year. I think the Cowboys, simply as a product of getting Dak Prescott back in the lineup, obviously have a chance to make a big jump. They just spent an entire draft on defense to try and fix that. Washington goes from, they didn't have a quarterback last year. They did not have competent quarterback play, and now you get Ryan Fitzpatrick. And we know what the Giants did around Daniel Jones with Kenny Galladay and Kadarius Toney. They added Odoree Jackson. They're going to roll the dice on the former Titans guy who was sort of a budding number one cornerback and hoping he'd stay healthy there. But all three of those teams got a whole lot better. The Eagles didn't, but that's maybe why Tom Donahoe is so upset about all this stuff.
If there was ever a division to have the most improved tag, it would be the NFC East. You know, that's always the award you give to somebody who's struggling and trying to get a little better, trying to get in the mix a little bit more. So, fitting, Gary.
My basement is full of most improved trophies from childhood, you know, in absence of just anything else that they can give you. But I think I had to rank nobody forced me to, but I decided to rank the divisions for a column that I did on Friday. And to me, the NFC East is still the worst division in the league. But I do think that perception changes quickly if Dallas goes out and behaves somewhat like they're capable of behaving. Like, that is, with a star quarterback and with a good offensive coordinator, that is an 11-win team. And I think if you have an 11-win team, and I think Washington kind of beats some people like they're capable of doing, you ride the Fitz magic like one is prone to do. And then the Giants, I mean, I think that the Giants are going to be a tough opponent this year just because they're sound defensively and they do have weapons. And even if Daniel Jones has one or two good days, you know, he can beat some decent secondaries with all those pieces that he has. Like, I think that they could be like 11-9-7-5 in terms of like win totals, which is like at least better than it was in the past. Like, I don't think it can nearly be as bad as it was before. But the weird thing is, like, the Giants and Washington in particular, the improvements that they've made sans quarterback are really good. Like, I think I would put certain position groups that both of those teams have against any other team in the league. Like, that's how good I think that they've gotten in certain places.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what Washington did last year, again, just really without a quarterback at that point. Defensively, they have the type of unit that can stand on its head and carry a team to the postseason. And if Daniel Jones is going to break out, all the pieces are there now. And if he has his big breakout season and Patrick Graham is still working his magic on the defensive side of the ball there with the Giants, I don't know. I think these are three 15-win teams somehow.
Maybe. Yeah, a lot depends on Jones taking the next step forward. Certainly, they have done a lot to set him up to do that, with the exception of making big moves on the offensive line, which is a little bit of a surprise, perhaps. But yeah, it's really hard to ignore the Cowboys. The defense has had a total makeover, starting with the coordinator. They bring Dan Quinn in, and they upgrade the defense. I mean, they spend their entire draft on defense, obviously trying to improve a unit that struggled basically in every way last year. And then on the offensive side of the ball, they, of course, get Dak back. So there aren't a lot of excuses for Mike McCarthy's team this year. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
And finally, before we discuss some of these MMQB power rankings that came out last week, but I did want to mention the Panthers real quick, because, look, we had a very controversial take during the mock draft series. We had the Panthers taking Justin Fields, and
That was not a we thing.
Ultimately, they take J.C. Horn. Look, I think they are a little bit overly optimistic. They think Sam Darnold is the answer. I don't think they think that. To be honest, I did not really take passing on Fields as a vote of confidence in Darnold. Obviously, they're going to play Darnold. We'll see what happens. But I think this is an organization maybe holding out hope a little bit that they can talk themselves into a Deshaun Watson, or they can get into a Russell Wilson sweepstakes, or whatever it might be. I think they just didn't want to lock in a young guy they weren't 100% confident in with that number 8 pick, and apparently Fields was not someone they had 100% confidence in.
Yeah, that's interesting. If they were 100% confident in him, it would have been hard to pass him up, but there are still some situations that are unresolved for various reasons. Rodgers and Wilson for on-field reasons, Watson for off-field reasons. So if there is a movement in any of those markets, there aren't that many available suitors at this point, because a lot of teams already addressed the quarterback situation in the draft. So if you're the Panthers, you may be in a somewhat advantageous position. The Giants as well, because they have that second first rounder next year. So they're, you know, they have the draft capital to make a move if they decide to. You know, someone like Rodgers would be impossible to pass up on.
I think that Rule is probably operating under the same thought process that a lot of college coaches have brought with them to the NFL, which is that you have to get somebody like that in order to make up for your lack of foothold in the league in general. And you know, we saw Nick Saban, and what did he do? It was between Dante Culpepper and Drew Brees. And what did Chip Kelly do when he was in Philadelphia? It was Michael Vick, and then Mark Sanchez, and then Sam Bradford, and all these other guys, cycling guys that coming through, kind of hoping to hit in the same way in that Drew Brees mold. Like a lot of these college coaches that come through, once they get there and realize, like, I can't succeed the way that I've succeeded in the past, I think your next option is to be like, I have to hit on something like this. Like, I have to somehow kind of backdoor myself. If I'm not going to get Trevor Lawrence, if I'm not going to get this, you know, solidified star player, I'm going to have to go around some other way to get a quarterback that's going to make up for a lot of what I just don't have right now.
All right, we saved the most important topic for last here, and that is the MMQB Power Poll results. Our first vote of, let's call it the 2021 post-off season. And the Tampa Bay Bucks do not get the top spot. It goes to Kansas City, and I don't know. How do you guys feel about it? Do you, out of respect for the Super Bowl champion, automatically put them first? Are you of the mind that they have the top spot until it's proven otherwise, or I don't know. I don't want to reveal who voted for whom. So I will leave that up to you guys if you want to reveal it yourselves. But I don't know. Have we disrespected the Bucks in some way?
Well, I did put the Bucks one because they brought back all of their starters. It's very unusual for a Super Bowl team to keep everybody together. But I actually do think Chiefs in the top spot is the right move. They address their most glaring weakness, the thing that lost them the Super Bowl. They addressed it in a big way this offseason. They really went after rebuilding their offensive line. And so because of that, I could see why they were put in the top spot. But yes, I stuck with the Buccaneers just because, you know, it's the same team that just won a Super Bowl, right? They meaningfully brought back their entire roster. And so I thought it was hard to move them for that reason. But I think there's a really good case for the Chiefs to be number one.
Can I come clean about something? I was doing the MMQB power poll in a little bit of a rush and started... What I do is I copy and paste Jenny's just so I have all the teams in there, and then I start kind of moving them around. It's just the way that I've done it for a long time. And, you know, if you have a brain that doesn't work 100% correctly, that's you just stick with what you know. And so I was doing that, and then I was like making a lot of changes, and then I was like, oh yeah, this guy goes here and this guy goes here, and wow, I'm surprised Jenny put this team over here. And then all of a sudden I was about 13 moves into our columnist Mike Rosenberg's column, like, and I just, you know, I Picasso'd his, and I don't know if I control Z'd enough to stop doing what I was doing to his. And then I just went back and redid mine again.
Okay.
That I think does have a lot to do with maybe some of the major questions that people are having about the poll this week.
Interesting. Connor Orr.
Ballot tampering.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So. We appreciate you coming clean. I will say, when Mitch Goldrich put out on Twitter that there was a rogue voter, my initial instinct was Connor, because you're always such a maverick and do things differently. And that's what we love about you. That's what you bring to the MMQB. You have these unconventional views that are often very right, but people are afraid to break away from the crowd. However, we learned quickly that it was in fact Michael Rosenberg, but it sounds as though it was a Connor-Michael mashup, which is just perfect. Like, that's the ideal combination for chaos, and makes a lot of sense as why the power poll was a little bit all over the place this year.
And first of all, when you call me a maverick, it's just like it's like a holdover from like a very publicly failed presidential campaign.
Well, okay,
you know,
I have
can
to
I be
say
like
though,
a...
I think that's very unfortunate, because the word maverick existed
was
long
great
before,
before that.
Yeah, great,
yeah.
Before that, I bought my first car before that presidential campaign, and it's a RAV4, so I named it Maverick the RAV4. You know, so it was a little bit disappointing to see Maverick be used in a different context. So I mean that in the context of which I named my car, you know, lovingly, with respect for the word, Connor. So just want to clarify that.
Let's say we're taking it back. We're taking it
back. That's
right.
Reclaiming Maverick.
Okay. All right. We're taking it back. I like it. But yeah, I mean, most of the time, I've said this before, and everybody knows my stance on this. My vote in the power poll is used to correct everybody else's incorrect votes. And so I rank teams much higher than they should be in order to drag them up, because people are underrating them. And I rank teams much lower because they're overrated. So if anything, people should just be thanking me. This time was more of just a serious error, both on my part and, you know, Michael Rosenberg should also go in and check those. You know, the power rankings are important enough where you should go back in there before the publishing and make sure that, you know, everything hasn't been tampered with. Because I will say this. There was back when we used to do our picks in the spreadsheet, the group spreadsheet, there was one year, and I'm not going to say who it was, where somebody was winning and they were doing their picks after everybody else, and waiting until everybody else's picks were in, and then kind of creatively and selectively sort of sprinkling them in to create an advantage. And so I'm saying that, you know, Google Doc is not infallible in terms of security. So that's all I'm saying. And just to be careful. So.
Leaving out names so as not to engage in libel, Connor. Smart move.
This person knows who this person is.
the picks were always scandalous. We needed an isolated booth for everyone to do their picks. Because people would do that. If you're in the lead, you just match the picks of the number two competitor. And that's how you maintain your lead.
Not very good. Controversial.
Jenny's texting me right now to find out who it was.
Somehow I forgot. I just want to make sure it wasn't me. I don't think it was me. I didn't engage in this behavior.
It was not you. It was not you.
I thought it was Jenny because Jenny did win it a couple years in a row. So,
we'll save that for another podcast.
All right, guys, that'll do it for this one. We'll be back next week. I think maybe like 2021 NFL draft redraft at this point. Probably that time of the offseason.
Yeah, mock drafts.
The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Vrentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed as well as the feeds for the Weekside Podcast and the Albert Breer Show. They're all for free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do subscribe, please leave a rating and review for all of them. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.